Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll hold off on the combine measurements as we have Bob Nightingale. He is with us here on our Sprint guest line. USA Today columnist, Major League Baseball columnist, joins us here in the program. Bob, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, doing great, thanks.
Good, good. I appreciate the time, and I thought it was interesting, your piece. Obviously, a lot has been written, said, talked about with the legalization of gambling here this week, what I think is the biggest story in a long time in sports. Yours was interesting from the standpoint, not that it isn't always, but from the standpoint that you got basically Tony Clark and umpires worried about their physical safety, that because fans will now be losing money, and most people will tell you they already are winning or losing money on it, just not legally, but that their safety could be at risk, that a fan will now take what is just anger and frustration to a new level because they lost money on it. Are they serious, or is this their way of pushing forward their want to grab 1% of the total wagering dollars?
No, they're very serious about this. I mean, you know, they understand, hey, Major League Baseball, you know, wants every penny they can have and get their 1%. But they say, you know, exactly what you said. It's one thing to get upset when your team loses. And it's another thing to, you know, have your mortgage been on it, your car note, and just that frustration, you know, turns into sheer anger and hostility. You know, we see what's going on in today's world. Guys worry about that. I mean, any fan can pick up the sports paper in the morning, or you know, go on the internet and know where a player is. You know where the family's or whether the player's in town or out of town. It's not too hard to find out where a team is staying on the road. And just, you know, we see so many crazy, nutty things in the world today. They worry about that, how money affects people. I mean, where do you see stuff thrown into the field? You know, whether it's, you know, bottles, beer cans, what have you. You know, what's going to happen now? When a guy loses money, and the money is going to be, you know, we still have gambling in baseball, but it's going to be so much bigger when this thing is legalized and baseball embraces it.
Why will it be bigger? I mean, I won't argue the point that there are people that right now are like, listen, I'm not going to make an illegal wager. I'm not going to go seek out a bookie and try to find him. That now will have a legal. Of course, I can tell you that I like to bet on sports. I'm not doing it right now because I don't want to be caught on tape and made an example of by the FBI. Like, oh, Radio Fatty busted for betting on sports. So it's a deterrent for me. I will now wager on sports once it becomes legal, and I can do it online. I'm not going to drive down to a casino. I think that's one of the other aspects that it takes effort. No one's driving 25 miles to make a $20 bet. But from a standpoint of like losing the mortgage, like that's everyone's fear, right? And there's no doubt gambling has addiction problems. I'm not going to say it doesn't. We've already got casinos, but now you've got an instrument and an individual to make your villain. I get that point, but when it's legal, you couldn't bet your mortgage. You've got to physically get your hands on the money and give it to the casino. So now where it's illegal, it's basically it's on scout's honor that you're going to pay the debt off. You can bury a debt because you don't actually have to physically produce the money. You can't walk into a casino and say, listen, I want 20 grand on this and trust me, I'm good for it. If you don't have the 20 grand, you're not putting the 20 grand down. So doesn't it make it less likely that somebody would lose the kind of money it would take to be so upset that they would want to inflict pain or harm on someone?
No, because you can get your hands on money. I mean, go get a loan if you want, you know, from the bank. You can, you know, go some of these places, you know, you turn in, cash in some of your IRA money or something like that, you know, what have you. So you can get your hands on money. You know, a lot of times it's not smart to, you know, go do that. But if a guy says, you know what, I'm going to get something on my IRA account, you know, I'm going to win here, I'm going to put right back in the next day, so it doesn't matter, and then you lose it. So people get their hands on it. I just think it's going to be so much easier to bet. And now that it's legal, you know, friends start talking and, you know, all of a sudden when you know no one's betting on a a White Sox game against Tampa in September, all of a sudden, hey, let's put some money on that. So we'll go to the bar and watch that thing. I just think the gambling in baseball will really jump up. I don't know if it'll jump up that high in football because I think it's already so out of control. But in baseball, a lot of people don't even understand how gambling in baseball works, with the odds and the minus 210s, 250s, that sort of thing. Well, I think people will gain a whole lot more knowledge on baseball in a hurry.
I understand the concern. I think we're more, we've had a tragically yet another shooting with multiple fatalities here today in this country. I get the extremist in the worst case scenario. This one to me, I guess I'd agree to disagree with Tony Clark. I don't see the numbers. Is there a worst case scenario that's out there? Yeah, I think there is, but I don't see like regularly harm coming to players. Or am I wrong? Have you done the research on that where there is gambling parlors in Europe that soccer players have been routinely pummeled, when wagers haven't gone the right way?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Okay. I have not done that research. But, and the one thing, too, is it's just the integrity issue in the part about suspicions. I mean, already now, say in the PEDs with the Robinson Cano case, when that happened, I got so many text messages and calls from different people in baseball. Hey, how about this player? How about that player? So you get, the suspicion aspect. So if a guy behind home plate has a bad game, I guarantee you're going to hear from fans and other people say, hey, what if this guy was in the take? How could he have been that bad? Or how can this player be that great and look so bad in this game? Was he throwing the game? And I think you're going to have a lot of those type of accusations as well.
Oh, I think you're right. I think that will happen, but I think it already happens. I'm curious when you said, and we're talking to Bob Nightingale from the USA Today Major League Baseball columnist, when you said has a bad night behind the plate, you're referring to an umpire, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, an umpire in baseball probably has more power than any official referee in any sport. I mean, he can really say the gambling is just the over-under. The over-under that game is 9. Yeah, the guy can have a tight strike zone. You're not affecting who wins or loses that game, but you can make sure that run total is a lot higher.
I, full disclosure, have many a frustration with the Major League Baseball umpires, and I can't figure out, and you've quoted Joe West a number of times in your piece. Listen, we have the technology, right? Not to sound like the $6 million man for the other old farts out there, but we can call the balls and strikes accurately. Here's a thought. I mean, they don't get to call it anymore. Because I'm with you. The guy behind the dish, we talked about that in the last segment, that I think the guy calling the balls and strikes could really – that is a guy. We mentioned, maybe goalies in soccer and hockey could give you – if they're on the take, they could do it. But the umpire – doesn't make the kind of money that generally a high-priced goalie or, will make. Maybe in soccer he does. But, why are we still letting them call the balls and strikes when it's so ridiculously out of whack for what the rule book is when we have the technology to have it done for us and done at a 100% accurate rate?
See, I don't think we do have the technology. I don't think we're close. I mean, those strike zones and stuff you see on TV – Those aren't accurate. And you go to talking to people at MLB, the umpires after stuff. A lot of those things will have the same strike zone as Aaron Judge as a Jose Altuve. I'm not saying it's completely wrong, but they're not on everything. And we don't even have the right technology for instant replay. I mean, how many times you watch games and you're watching that replay over and over, and it still doesn't look like it's the right call. It doesn't look like they have the same camera angles as like NFL games. It's almost like you watch an NFL game, you can tell right away whether the catch is made or inbounds or out of bounds. Baseball's still having trouble with that. I mean, there's been so many calls where, you're looking at a replay, you could have sworn, the guy was safe, he's still called out. So I think they're still years away from getting that, the strike zone technology right.
Really?
And what happens to that technology is, breaks down or is wrong in game 7 of the World Series. Umpire doing it's fine because that's human error. But I think, doing the technology right, I just think we're years and years away from even thinking about something like that.
Boy, I think it's on our doorstep right now. And I think one of the things about it where I think is interesting about your comments there, I get it. Listen, is that strike zone 100%? I don't know. But it's at least uniform, right? If it's going to make the mistake on one team, it's going to make the mistake on the other. And if it's going to make it on one hitter, it's going to make it on the other. I mean, today we have, well, his strike zone. I mean, we were talking about it. Erik Skoglund, you look at his game log, and you're like, wow, man, he's really figuring some things out. And I think he is getting better. But he had an umpire strike zone that gave him an extra 10 inches on each side of the plate. And that's why those numbers are down. That wouldn't happen. I mean, I won't argue that the computers and the cameras and everything are 100%, but I will argue that they're more accurate and at least uniform. Would you agree with that?
I don't know about uniform. I mean, you know, are the technology the same for ESPN or Fox Telecast or TBS? I don't think so. And you still, I think there's still a variance between a player's size. You know, like I mentioned before with a Judge and Altuve, it's like, you know, sometimes that strike zone isn't quite right. And that's just from, you know, talking to MLB officials and umpires and stuff. And they get very frustrated because what we see on TV a lot isn't what was accurate. So that's why I think we're still years away. And when I talk to MLB official commissioner's office, and they're the ones who say they're a long way away from that. They're not close to getting that technology. You know, if they were, they'd try the minor leagues. They're not even trying the minor leagues because they're that far off.
Well, I don't know that the technology is it. Bill Duplessis, he's considered by most, we certainly think here in Kansas City, the best replay guy in the game of baseball, told me that he has about 15, 16 more camera angles than we see on TV. That all the cameras, all the cameras that are lined up for the pitch FX and all those different things, he has all those angles, including an aerial angle for, you know, safe out calls at the plate that we don't get to see. That he has all these monitors. He has one screen, the big screen TV that's chopped up into all these different angles, and he can zoom in, click, and zoom in right away on any of them and forward and backward on the replay. He's not – what we're seeing is not what they're analyzing. And so there is more than what we see on TV. Listen, I won't argue that replay is not the end all people want, that they make mistakes on it because it's still up to a human to look at it and determine it. And I'd like to see us get to where we get to timeouts in baseball and you have to challenge. And if you timeouts to take pitchers out of the game, all those, you know, instead of six mound visits, give them three. Otherwise, you come out, you're making a change, and let's play ball. You know, all the things to speed up the game. That's my opinion. And then use those timeouts. You lose one if you challenge and aren't right. And then at least it cuts down how often people are going to want to challenge. But there is, I think there's more technology than you're giving it credit for, Bob. I think there's more views of it from the ballpark. When Bill Duplessis tells me he's got like 16, I can't remember the number. I'd have to dig back. We'd have to go. It's on our podcast because it was a great conversation to really enlighten me to how it works. There's a lot more angles that are there in the ballpark than what we're just seeing on TV. And that, to me, gives them the chance to do it. I'm with you. I mean, that we may not be close to it. I think we should be close to it. If we have the technology, and I guess, you know, we're, you and I aren't going to come to an agreement on this right now. Are the umpires worried when you talk to them, when you talk to Joe West? Are they worried that it's coming soon? Or are they the ones that are fighting against it?
Yeah, they're not worrying about it. I don't think they think there's any way it's coming soon. You know, even you know, when they talked about, you know, the rule changes and pitch clock and stuff, they were never worried about that. And they were never saying, it's not coming. And, you know, they were right, it's not. But I don't think they think it's coming, you know, at least within the next 5 years or so. And, you know, all these umpires won't be around in 10 years. So they're not for it. You know, they actually – surprisingly, worth for the replay. I think, you know, when you miss a you know, Jim Joyce, when you miss a call on a perfect game, or you know, Don Deckinger, and you know, your call might have changed a World Series. You know, they worry about those guys, and then you fear that, yeah, that you live with that for the rest of your life. So they actually welcome replay that way. They don't like the strike zone. I mean, not only does it take away jobs, obviously, but you know, come on, it's like, you know, we're talking about technology, and you say, okay, you missed that pitch. A lot of time, it's like, you know, a half an inch off the plate. Hey, swing a bat. You know, is a hitter really, you know, that trained, his eyes that good to, you know, to say, oh, I'm going to count on this umpire to call ball four here, you know, in a key situation. If it's that close, go ahead and swing. You know, that's the way it used to be. And I think now guys are just so happy to take walks and stuff. It's like a little getting out of control.
That's fair. That's a fair point. I agree. And you know, I if there's no point. Like I said, if the technology's not there, and I'm wrong, or what I perceive as the technology's not there, then I get what they're doing. Umpires are a hard job. I think we need to get away from not showing replays. I don't understand how an umpires union is able to stop Major League Baseball from improving their product and showing controversial replays up on the scoreboard. I mean, that to me is staggering, that the game is still held hostage by the umpires on that front.
Well, we're seeing replays now, right? I mean, we didn't before. You're absolutely right. But now with replays, I travel all over. Only, I see replays all the time on the scoreboard. Oh, yeah.
Only if it's challenged.
True. Yeah, only if it's challenged. Yeah, you're right. Only when it's challenged. Yep.
I mean,
only when it's challenged.
Yeah.
I mean, same thing. The big thing for that, especially back in the day, was not to incite the fans. You know, right? I mean,
right.
I just want to anger the fans. Absolutely. Which goes back to our previous,
it does.
Gambling inside the fans.
We're talking to Bob Nightingale here in the program. I want to go back because you had a lot of information on the Eric Hosmer contract and when that was going out. And you had it. You were right. It was the Padres and Royals coming down, and the numbers ended up being right around where you were. But then reports kind of contradicted some of the stuff. I think we were looking it up. It was you were talking about 7 for $147, and the Padres ended up inking Eric Hosmer 8 for $144. It's a complicated deal. It's $5 million signing bonus. It's $20 million a year for 5 years, and then it's a 3-year $39 million option that is Eric Hosmer's option to pick up after those 5 years. Take me through how that works. There's no doubt that there's gamesmanship going on between team and agent when those things are going on. Was Scott Boras, you know, for lack of a better term, using you to try to sell the price and drive up the price on Eric Hosmer when all that was going on?
No, when the it came out and they was talking to people that were very close with Hosmer.
Right.
There's a lot of information was coming from Hosmer indirectly.
Okay.
And the thing was, hey, the Padres have 7 years at 140. You know, wow, okay, they're really serious. But, you know, his heart's still in Kansas City, and KC, you know, offered, you know, 7-147. And I was very skeptical about the KC part. San Diego certainly made sense. And sure enough, San Diego came out right away and said, yeah, we have offered 7 years. Not quite at 140, but close.
Yeah.
You know, Kansas City was quiet on that. And then, you know, as it turns out, when he signs his contract for that, you know, at 144, you know, then you go, okay, what happened to KC here? The guy wanted to stay in Kansas City. And as it turns out, that, you know, last year at some point, he was offered, you know, right around that figure, and it was rejected. He hit free agency. And then in the offseason, apparently they had offered right around 7 years at 147 without ownership approval. It was like, hey, we're thinking about this number. How about this? And so Eric Hosmer thought that, okay, they're offering 7 at 147. It was really a number, you know, thrown out by, you know, some, you know, I'm not saying specifically 147, but right there that Dan Moore had said, how about this number? Ownership did not go for it. So he thought it was a firm offer. It was not. It was a firm offer right around that number when he was still with the Royals that he rejected. So I think that's where the discrepancy was in the Kansas City offer. San Diego's, you know, was right there all along.
Yeah.
But I think when KC got ownership and said, no, we're not doing that, that's when it became a very easy decision for Hosmer. Because he really, I didn't realize until spring training, talking to him at length, just how badly he wanted to stay in Kansas City. And I think if it had been close, he certainly would be a Royal today.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. I mean, listen, and $140 million to any player in a game where injuries are a part of it is a bold investment. I can't say whether they made the right or wrong decision, but that does speak to, listen, we sat and waited. It seemed like an eternity. I want to say like 6 weeks. The Braves job was open. There were reports that the Braves were interested in Dayton Moore, and it dragged on and dragged on, and Dayton said he wasn't going to talk about it, but it never died, and the Braves never hired anyone. And then finally they did, and it ended was perhaps ownership's commitment to laying out the payroll, specifically to Eric Hosmer. Was that part of the of what was taking so long for Dayton Moore to commit to staying in Kansas City?
I don't think so. What I was told, I may be wrong in this, but I thought that was almost a fact that Kansas City ownership denied permission. they never gave permission to Dave Moore to even interview there. Certainly it would have been his job. I mean, who wouldn't want the guy, particularly his ties with John Cherholz? So I'm almost positive on this. It was strictly, and I don't know whether Dave Moore would have left or not, but he never got permission to talk to him. And certainly he would have got a huge raise and everything else. And you look at that farm system, you got a chance to look like a genius, you know, which is happening with Alex Anthopoulos with the Braves now. But I think ownership completely blocked him. You know, whether he would have left or not, I don't know. But he never had the choice.
What were the Braves waiting on then for so long?
I think they're waiting for Kansas City to change their mind, the ownership, and say, hey, can't you have permission? And just looking around at different things, it's like, you might as well. Remember, not at the time, too. It's like investigations with their own GM, John Capolella, investigations in John Hart. So they had so many things going on at that time. So I think that was a big delay. But I really do believe, too, from talking to Braves officials, that, I mean, the only guy they really, really wanted was Dan Moore. And I think they kept waiting, you know, what would it take? Do we change job titles? And then and I never had this confirmed. There was also talk that, okay, if you want to talk to Dan Moore or hire him, you know, you got to give us X in return. And you know, we want money, we want players, that sort of thing. And I'm not sure that part's true, but I heard that through the grapevine.
That was discussed, like what the compensation would be.
Exactly, yeah.
So, wow.
I mean, the Braves, you know, valued him so much. And like I said, who wouldn't?
Right.
But, you know, particularly the, you know, his roots there and just the tie-in with John Cherholz. And I, you know, like I said, I don't know whether, you know, I talked to Dana Spring. I don't know whether he would have left or not. You know, he's got a son in high school there and everything else. He absolutely loves Kansas City and works well with ownership. But it certainly would have been very enticing, appealing to leave for that franchise with so many prospects coming. In the fact, in Kansas City, yeah, he already rebuilt once. You know, it's not fun to rebuild again. It's not fun to go through what he's going through right now.
The idea that he didn't know exactly what was out there from Atlanta, like, I get it. They didn't give him permission to talk. They blocked him. But he absolutely, I mean, they're out on the baseball trails, crossing paths with the other teams all the time. He absolutely knew he had an offer there, right? And so, was the holdup in getting a new contract done here in Kansas City? Was that, you know, you mentioned the Braves were just waiting, hoping he would change his mind or come up with compensation or create a new job title that made it, you know, to where this was actually something that the Royals couldn't block, all those different things. During that time, do we believe that Dayton more than got a new deal here in Kansas City and one that was to his liking? Because I heard estimates that he was the lowest paid general manager in baseball going into this offseason, this past offseason. Yeah, which is staggering to think when he won a world championship 2 years before.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the lowest, but you got to see he's one of the lowest. I mean, the guy that was there the land before, John Coppola, was a rookie GM. He might have been the lowest at the time. Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's got to be low on that scale, particularly the cost of living in Kansas City and everything else. But, yeah, if he didn't know what kind of money exactly he would have got, you know, with Atlanta, push, come, and shove, you know, I'm sure he knows he would have, you know, tripled or quadrupled his wages. I mean, just the way Atlanta has a brand new ballpark and everything else, as revered as he is in that organization. I mean, he would have made a killing, and I would have thought, you know, would have probably been among the top, you know, 5, 7, or 8 paid GMs in baseball.
Last question before I get to my final four, and that is, how would you, you know, to your knowledge, how would you characterize the relationship between Dayton Moore and David and Dan Glass?
I think a good relationship. I think a strong working relationship. I think there might have been some frustrations, you know, at the beginning and stuff like that. But, you know, he had opportunities to leave Atlanta before and didn't. He wanted to make sure it was the right thing. So I think he got promised things by ownership as far as letting him spend in international money, hands-off approach. So I think it's a good working relationship. I never heard him say anything but admirable things about ownership and how much he likes it there. And obviously the flip side, how can I, you know, like the job Dan Moore has done. So, and I'm not sure, you know, what his contract situation is now. I really don't. If he does become a free agent, and I know his son's about to graduate, yeah, from high school in a couple of years, you know, what happens? You know, how long does he stay in Kansas City? But I do know he loves it there.
We're talking right now to Bob Nightingale, the USA Today Major League Baseball columnist. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by Mosquito Squad. 877-MO-SQUAD or go to kansascity.mosquitosquad.com to get the service that I use to protect my family, friends, pets. Mosquito Squad will keep you from being eaten alive this season. Take advantage of it, whether it's just a one-event spray or taking care of you all season long like I do. It's 877-MO-SQUAD, kansascity.mosquitosquad.com. First one, Bob, will Dayton Moore win another pennant as GM of the Royals?
I'm going to say no.
No? And then there's just
math. I'm going to say no. I just think they're rebuilding so much and there's just going to be too many teams ahead with money. I'll say no.
Okay.
Maybe it's team president, GM, no.
Okay. Does Pete Rose belong in the Hall of Fame? You referenced Pete Rose at the end of your piece. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame, yes or no?
I say no. The reason was, forever and a day, there was no gambling in baseball and this and that. I don't care what when people say or he says. I never bet against my own team. But the days he did not bet on the Reds means that, everybody knows the Reds were going to lose that game. And he would do everything in his power to win on those days, even burn on a bullpen when he bet on the Reds. So there's always signs in every clubhouse, no gambling in baseball. There were never signs in clubhouse until recently, no steroids or PED use.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Perfect answer. All right, your feeling on what the World Series will be right now, who over who?
I'm going to stick with my original prediction. I'm going Houston Astros, Chicago Cubs.
Okay.
I can't remember who I picked between the Cubs and Astros. I'll go Cubs and Astros, and I'll stick with that.
Okay, I like that. And finally, what's the biggest sports bet you've ever made?
I'm trying to think. It's probably that'd be something with the Super Bowl. I've had fun with the pools before seasons, the over-unders as far as, how many wins and
sure.
A team will get the over-unders. That's a fun thing for a season. But it'd have to be a Super Bowl. I mean, Super Bowl, I cannot bet on a Super Bowl, right? It's a blast, particularly when you're up in Vegas. I don't know if you ever experienced a Super Bowl up in Vegas, but it's unbelievable. I mean, you bet on the coin flips and everything else. Every single play is confusing because you're you can bet on anything up there at that time. It was certainly Super Bowl involved.
Super Bowl involved, but you don't remember how much?
No, it's probably a couple hundred. It certainly wasn't a thousand or anything that. Yeah, probably just a couple hundred.
Okay, very good. Responsible gambling. That's what we hear from Bob Nightingale. Hey, Bob, I really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for sharing your time with us, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, you bet. Bob Nightingale from the USA Today Major League Baseball sports columnist. Ownership said no.
Compelling stuff.
Had the numbers he stands by were offered, 7 at 147, and that was offered by management. But ownership said no.
Everyone's eyes in this room went,
I mean, listen, I didn't, this statement was not made to me, it was made to Bob. Bob's done this job for a long time. I trust him that he's been told that that's exactly what he was told. Now, somebody lying to him, he kept reiterating close to Hosmer, which almost makes me think, it's Hosmer.
Yeah, right.
If I had to guess who it was, I would guess it was Hosmer.
Yeah, he just flat out said, I was getting stuff directly from them.
People close from to Hosmer.
Yeah. So that's,
which we all assumed was Scott Boras, but he seemed to make it clear, no, it wasn't Scott Boras. People directly from him. And that ownership said no. Do I think David Glass and Dayton Moore get along? Yes. Do I think they work well together? Yes. But if do you think those two are connected and what took so long for the Braves to move on? The Braves clearly were trying to get Dayton Moore.
Those two events we use the word fissure.
Yeah.
A couple days ago.
Yeah.
Separation of two things that were once together.
I don't think they can be mutually exclusive. One has nothing to do with the other. I think they had to be intertwined
Absolutely.
At some point. Seemingly, they've come together now, and hopefully it's a healthy relationship moving forward. But I don't know. Great stuff from Bob Nightingale. We'll take a break. You're in the program.